Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our Saturday, May 11th, 2019 Bible study. We're recording and broadcasting from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Independence. And today, our moderator is Mike from New York.
Thank you. I just wanted to say real quick before the reading, I am really grateful how well the process works here in this Plainfield church. I had made some changes formulating the study, and the proofreader had a question about how one of the questions fit in. Linda contacted me, and I saw it didn't fit in with a change that had been made. So by phone, we proceeded to work out the solution to the issue, which is why the format of this study had been rearranged from the original posting. So I am very grateful to the whole system of checks for a high standard of the work done at this church, and in this case, the Bible Study Committee is headed by Linda and Thomas, the proofers, the watching, and all that participate in the studies with their one goal, the desire for illumination of God's Word in the Bible. So thank you to all for making these such a success. So, the readings for today is from Destiny of the Mother Church by Bliss Knapp, pages 192 to 193. Sometime during the year of 1898, Judge Septimus J. Hanna, who was then serving as first reader of the Mother Church and the editor of the periodicals, was led to give special attention to the 53rd and 54th chapter of the book of Isaiah. Was revealed to him that the 54th chapter is as distinctly a prophecy of Mrs. Eddy as the 53rd is a prophecy of Jesus. He pondered this unfolding. He decided to write an editorial embodying his views. When the editorial was set in galley proof, the courtesy of showing it to Mrs. Eddy before publication brought it to her attention. The editorial struck a responsive chord in Mrs. Eddy's thought, for it reminded her of a vision which had come to her 21 years before, when the first revolt had taken place in her church, leaving her with but one or two loyal students, and when she was without salary or funds. In that darkest hour, the people scorned her teachings, and even those whom she had raised from the dream of death shunned her in the street, and came to her and vision that remarkable utterance addressed to the daughter of Zion, which said, quote, she shall sit under her own vine and fig tree, and the people shall hear her gladly, unquote.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a wonderful quote. Thank you, Mike. What comes to my thought is how beautiful it is for God, all-knowing, knowing what she might go through, even then in the vision, reassuring her of safety. It's so beautiful.
And I think it's just as remarkable that she had the spiritual wisdom to trust that.
Yes. Well, she was so used to hearing God's voice and trusting. It was second nature.
She knew she had no choice, which is how we should feel, right? Yes. We have no choice either. Well, in a way, that's why we had to be excommunicated from the organization, so that we would have no choice. And Mrs. Eddy's history, as written by Gilbert Carpenter, why it was such a great source of inspiration and encouragement for us.
Yeah, recently I heard, and I was very grateful for this, Joe, who lives in Florida,
And Dave, I think I mentioned, he's the one that gave that beautiful testimony about Mrs. Evans. But Joe, and they had been here for quite some time in our church, and certainly through the law case and the trial. And Joe has been typing for us the history of the Christian Science Movement by William Lyman Powell, which is a wonderful book everyone should read. It's a two-volume book. It's long. But his father was directly related, as was he, with the early days in science. And so anyway, she's been typing it for us, so we can have it on our website to download, right, Jeremy?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, she was saying in typing the last volume that she was just weeping at all that Mrs. Eddy had to go through. Explained here as well. She's being shunned and only had two students left. But Joe also said, and I'm sure in a much lesser way, but it reminded her, too, of all that we had to go through with the law case. And you see, you have to remember, it wasn't just for a year or, you know, even 2 years, 30, 40 years of this, watching 24 hours, the intense pressure of it, because it was trying to destroy our church and the Evanses and the members, with if it could. But I thought, I'm so grateful for that, because it put us in a different place. It gives us with a different perspective. It was boot camp for Christian Scientists. Someone else had pointed out a website, a practitioner's website. And for practitioner websites, and this is one journal listed, yeah, it was a fairly nice one. But again, I wondered, what is the difference? Because there is a difference. And then when Joe said this, I realized this is the difference. When you see the red dragon rise up, yeah, it changes you for life. And when you realize the workings of animal magnetism and what it has to, you have to do, not to ignore it, not to run from it, but to stand courageously and work through it and therefore prove its nothingness. That's a very different experience. And it puts you in a very different place. And it does make you a lot tougher than I certainly made me a lot tougher. I was the most meek and mild person on earth. So I'm grateful for that experience, because I think it is through that we have gained a real sense of what the real science is, which is why we want to share it with you all the way we do. So.
And thank God you did go through it, because I wonder now if there would be any place for, like, the writing of the carpenter or anybody like that. Wouldn't be.
Well, there certainly wouldn't be church, and we are watching, because it seems like a lot of you want to make sure that those books are ever available. I think there's just people are waiting a matter of time when all of this independent movement folds up. But even in the study, excuse me, of this Bible study, brings out the remnant. There's always this remnant. We pray to God there always will be this remnant. And our magazine, The Love is a Liberator, for the month of May, is How to Handle Animal Magnetism. And Carol already has a very good start to it. We've got so many good articles on this. Going to be a blockbuster. We have an article by you, Florence. in case you didn't know.
I was just going to say I agree absolutely that there is something different here, no question, and I'm sure anyone who comes here and is able to stay as we discover our shortcomings and everything and become humble enough to learn it, we'll find that it's different. The growth is different. What we gain is also different. I know that when I was in the branch church, I just could feel that something was missing, and just so grateful that we're led here and grateful for everything that I have learned. It's just, I know that probably, I don't know if I would be here at all if it wasn't for what I've gained from Plainfield. So it is different, no question.
It's different.
In my mind.
Yes. My first contact with the church, I was astounded at the strength and conviction that I heard. I had come from, from a Boston church, and it was wimpy. There was no conviction. It was just nice words. But when I came here, the spirit was just incredible. And that's why I'm still here.
I as well. And isn't the Somerville Church closed now?
I think so. So many of them around here are closed.
Yeah, so many. Westfield, Scotch Plains, all of them have closed. And we still stand.
While waiting for Plainfield to fold, they all fold.
Well, that's true. You have to be careful.
Yeah.
I know. They're all waiting for us to be crushed. But it made us stronger. We rose up higher. And now we certainly understand the importance of the independence. And this we have to give to all of you.
Well, it's the form of organization that God intended for the Christian Science Church. That's why the manual that Mrs. Eddy left is what it is. Democratic and independent branch churches. Exactly what we are.
This makes me think of something that I wrote from Matthew Henry in research for the first question. It says, "The Lord of hosts left unto them a very small remnant that were kept pure from the common apostasy and kept safe and alive from the common calamity. Christ's is a little flock. It is good for a people that have been saved from utter ruin to look back, to see how much they owed to a few good men that stood in the gap."
That is beautiful. And please, I don't know, post it somewhere on the forum or the bulletin board. That is just beautiful. And Jeremy, you as well, put it up somewhere. I mean, to save. Because that describes it exactly. And it's never a lot of people. It's never the masses. It's always a few. And it only takes, one or two to bring it about, as in our case, seven. She was able to bear all of that.
And during all that time, she produced magazines every other month. She gave sermons every Sunday. That whole book of sermons and articles, that's all her words during that time.
Yes.
And it was just astounding.
She wrote lessons, and then she oversaw all the church houses, which was no small feat. It was incredible. So that's why when people are critical of her, I just say, walk a mile in her shoes. You tried doing what she did. And we are the only independent church that has survived for this long, but it came about in the 70s. And we're still here and still working.
What amazes me is that what I had stated in my ad lib of the opening statement was that in most organizations, a person would not be bothered by bringing up what would seem like a very, very minor error, or they'd be afraid to do it because instead of somebody dealing with that error, then they would get yelled at for bringing out some mistake. So, it really does show how the one mind is functioning here, because it's just beautiful how organized the lessons are when they're made by different people, et cetera, et cetera.
It is true. It is truly God's hand. Thank you, Mike. There's no human explanation for it all, the way it comes together. Someone was saying the people that were brought here, I think it was Suzanne, people that were brought here, it is, all of you, it's like you've been handpicked. And not everybody's ready for this. Some people would still run like rabbits, but thank God for those who are ready and ready to take up the slack, take up the cross, really, I should say, the cross, and willing to carry it.
Well, and this is what God created each one of us. We all have different talents, but we all have the same mind. And that's why we can work together. People get ideas for them to do from God. They have the freedom, as Mike said, freedom to do it without being criticized or ostracized or intimidated.
Or micromanaged.
Exactly. It's only when the human mind steps in and wants to take control of God's creation that things get screwed up. That, of course, is what has happened in Boston. It's what has happened to pretty much every organization. So we strive to keep that from happening here. And we're amazed at what God accomplishes here.
And whenever, yeah, it is amazing. We can't, when we see how much is put out every week, it's like, wow. But it just flows. And if anybody is in the human mind or gets a lot of pride or will, they end up sticking out like a sore thumb. And they either
change.
Yeah, they're willing to change, or they eject themselves. They do, because they feel so uncomfortable. It was interesting. I think we said last week, Gary and I had watched the Apostle of Luke. It was the story of the Bible story being read while it was being acted out, and it's the part where it was Luke, right? Luke, in the Acts, where they all got together and they were all of one mind, of one accord. They were living. It shows how they're all living together and in harmony. But then Ananias and Sapphira, yes. And they were dishonest and not doing what they should, and they stuck out like sore thumbs. And
they had one foot in and one foot out, and it was the one foot out that was their downfall.
Yep, and they didn't listen. They justified what they did, and so bye-bye. It was interesting to see it in that light as a documentary or
drama. Yeah, it was kind of a documentary.
Yeah, well, anyway, we should get back to our...
Back to the questions at hand here.
Okay, that was a beautiful, thank you for that. A very important idea we're working on, O Daughter of Zion. So thank you, Mike, for this. We're ready to move on, right?
Right. Okay, so that's the topic, O Daughter of Zion. Bible readings were Isaiah 1, Isaiah 52, Isaiah 54, and 1 Kings 4, verse 25. First question, what were the conditions of Judah and Jerusalem in the time of Isaiah? And that's from Isaiah 1.
Well, the people were definitely not faithful to God and didn't care to be. And the prophet was urging repentance on them, and they were not listening.
Thank you.
Yeah, conditions were not very good. They were occupied by others. They were
kind of going through the motions, you know, making sacrifices. But most of them were pretty corrupt and leading meaningless lives. And except for this remnant, it says they would have been gone, just like Sodom and Gomorrah.
I was reading Isaiah 1 last night, and I was struck by that first chapter. And in chapter 5, there's the phrase, the whole head is sick and the whole heart faint. And when I looked it up, it just talked about it being like a deadly epidemic, that it spread everywhere into the whole, the very head and body politic, and that every person had been stricken, all ranks of men. Corrupted.
Wow, thank you.
I also saw it. This went on a long time because it's besides the rule of Uzziah, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. So it's a rebellion or turning away from God that went on a long, long time. And when such words as being as a harlot and in the companions of thieves and all this, and is strong, whatever they were doing, was certainly opposed to God.
Yes.
It's an important point. It didn't happen overnight. It had been a long, slow build-up to get to this condition. There's one verse in Isaiah 1 that struck out to me. That's number 23, where it described the people as followeth after rewards. They judge not the fatherless. There doth the cause of the widow come unto them. So, you know, this whole idea of following after rewards, everybody loves the good things and the outward appearances of things, but they give little regard to the underlying cause of why they even come about in the first place. They've forgotten their God. They've also forgotten the love. Those that were in need, they had no compassion for them at all. Dangerous state to be in.
Yeah, and they were rebels.
Matthew Henry also said that they were ungrateful, which is so important.
Yeah, that's one of the first signs of anyone who's drifting off is their ingratitude. Mrs. Evans said that, you know, the kingdom of God was like a wonderful, warm, comforting home that you can be in, but then you wander off into the storm. You go out yourself, and that happens when you're ungrateful and you're not grateful for what you have. So you wander off, and then you have to have a wilderness experience, just as the prodigal son story we had last week. But you do it to yourself, and it starts with the ingratitude. And I thought it was interesting what Elizabeth said, how it spread. You know, they say one rotten apple does what?
Spoils
the whole bunch. So, it is up to each one of us to do what?
Don't let ourselves spoil.
Yes. That's why, to defend yourself daily against aggressive mental suggestion. That's why she gave us the daily duties.
And not be made to forget nor to neglect the duty to God, to your leader, and to mankind.
So if it seems to be running rampant, it doesn't have to touch you or your home. If you do this mental work, it can't.
And if it tries, what do you do?
No, it can't do it.
Yeah, and then you beat the crap out of it so that it doesn't do it.
Draw your line. That's it. Don't cross it.
Don't cross that line.
No plague can come near our dwelling.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You work with. And when you know the Bible and you know Mrs. Eddy's works, then you're alert to the workings of animal magnetism. You're not asleep. And that's why, you know, part of this whole thing to get everybody asleep and is don't read the Bible. Who needs it? And Christians are just a bunch of jerks. And get you to feel all this anti-religion stuff. And some old theology isn't so great, but we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. So you protect your own home, and then you do the work, that the watching. Carpenter says that's the greatest protection there is, because when you're working for others and you're handling all this animal magnetism, whatever it claims to be, you're handling it for yourself and for your home. So when people start feeling worried and saying, oh, you know, everything's going to hell and all of this, well, I ask them, are they watching? What do you say about that, Jeremy?
Oh, I'm so grateful to have come here and learned about watching. I used to feel such, I don't know, somewhere between trepidation and dread about the world. But to learn how to watch puts it all in a place of peace afterwards. And I'm so grateful. I'm not really sure why anybody would learn about it, and I'm not doing it.
It is a puzzlement to me, too.
Because, I don't know, half an hour is well worth not feeling that awful feeling anymore.
You know, if you can see thoughts, you know, when people are negative and hateful, and it's like they are polluting the air. And so when you do a watch and you're praying and you're sending forth God's pure thoughts, what are you doing?
Cleansing the air.
Yes.
And purifying the atmosphere.
Purifying the atmosphere.
And your own thought, too.
And your own thought, and then doing that, you're doing it for all mankind. That's how it works.
Isaiah 1, verse 18 says, come now, and let us reason together, saith the Lord. And when I read that, I just thought, that's what, you know, all the discussions here feel like to me. Just come now, let's learn how to think right. So I love that.
Thank you. And though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be white as snow.
So is any... first time in the history of the Israelites that they've had this problem? Was it the last time that they ever had this problem?
No.
Have we ever had this problem in this United States?
Yes.
I was just going to say, this is what fascinated me about this, was that if we think we have it bad now, reading this, going, well, things were really bad, and there were a couple of little random items that struck me, but one, I'm not even sure it was in the parts that were listed to read, but it was definitely stated that the reason they had come to this was because of their ingratitude to God. I mean, that was a huge point, and I'm not sure. That might have been another part of Isaiah, but it was definitely in Isaiah. The other thing was that a solution that they were trying to use in Isaiah 1:13, bring no more vain oblations, incense is an abomination unto me, etc., etc. So it's don't go through the rituals, just do the right, what's right.
Thank you.
Yeah, they were going through the motions, sacrificing lambs. Whatever. And it's not what I want.
You say stop all that, just do what I want.
Get your heart right.
That's right.
The other thing that was an abomination to God was that when they were into captivity by the Assyrians or Babylonians, that instead of turning to God for the solution, I mean, there were obviously Daniel and other prophets that did, but the general population was looking to Egypt to save them. And I find that so ironic because that's the place that they had to escape from in the first place.
Yeah, and it's, you know, interesting that God is usually the last place people turn to.
Yeah.
Be the first.
But so often we turn to a so-called human or material solution. The problem that turning to human or material means created in the first place.
Yeah.
Returning to your vomit.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But again, if you don't know the Bible and if you haven't learned about science, you know, people just don't seem to know better. But this is why it's so important. You can't overlook it. So, and I love that. Yes, except the Lord of Hosts had left us a very small remnant of survivors. We should have been like Sodom and we should have been like Gomorrah. So don't ever underestimate what a small remnant can do in their watching, in their purifying thought, so that this polluted thought doesn't just overcome.
I see a bit of progress here, because in Sodom and Gomorrah, it was most of only one family that escaped, whereas here there was a remnant that could work together towards the correct end to the solution.
True, thank you.
Yes, and there should be progress. I mean, after all, God does love us. There is a science. There are laws that govern the universe. So we should learn.
I was talking to Florence about this yesterday, and she was saying the pressure and everything you go through sometimes, which seems sometimes like you just don't know if you're going to make it to the next day. But the outcome is what, Lauren? What did you say?
I mean, what word can describe it? For me, it's either I'm alive now or I wasn't going to be. That's it.
Yeah.
You're right.
And to be purged of, because that's what all this is, it's a purging experience. To be purged of the fear, to be purged of the dread, to be purged of the dependence on matter, to be purged of hate, resentment. Because you get purged when you get so tried, when you go through that fiery trial, you get purged of these things. And so when you come out on the other end, there's no words like it to be free of much of that. And of course, none of us are perfect, and I'm not trying to say I am or anyone is at this point. We all are, in truth, perfect, but we still have things to work out. But you are so much farther along than if you hadn't had the trials. That's why they're proofs of God's care. If you bear through them and don't give up, or run, or turn to the physician, so to speak.
Face like a flint.
Face like a flint. Toward where?
Toward Jerusalem.
Toward Jerusalem. So maybe we should go to the next.
Yes, and I just wanted to say, if nobody gets anything else out of the lesson, the study other than what was just stated here, I think that is just absolutely wonderful, so thank you very much for that. So, question two, what was the relation of Jerusalem and Zion? And maybe it should have been, what's the difference, what's the similarities, etc.
Does someone want to tell us what Zion is?
Well, in my King James Version Bible dictionary, it says Zion or City of David, one of the hills of Jerusalem on which the temple gate stood, was for many years the resting place of the ark. Zion thus became the sacred name for the whole city.
In miscellaneous writings on page 126, Betty says, Christian scientists have a strong race to run and foes in ambush, but bear in mind that in the long race, honesty always defeats dishonesty. God hath indeed smiled on my church, this daughter of Zion. She sitteth in high places, and to deride her is to incur the penalty of which the Hebrew bard spake after this manner. He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. So, I mean, and this is, I think, part of Mike's point of this lesson. Daughter of Zion is likened to Mrs. Eddy, and she calls it her church. And she and the church are inseparable, aren't they?
Yes. Also in Science and Health, she gives a definition, though. In the glossary, Zion is spiritual foundation and superstructure, inspiration, spiritual strength. And then it says emptiness, unfaithfulness, desolation. So,
thank you.
And that's the human abusing,
that's right,
of it.
Yeah.
And many of these words she gives two definitions, the spiritual,
right,
true definition, and then the false human.
And you see, this is the true sense. What is the definition of Jerusalem?
Mortal belief and knowledge obtained from the five corporeal senses, the pride of power and the power of pride, sensuality, envy, oppression, tyranny, and then home, heaven.
and New Jerusalem. Definition of New Jerusalem.
New Jerusalem, divine science, the spiritual facts and harmony of the universe, the kingdom of heaven, or reign of harmony. There we have it.
There we have it.
Kind of like the Old Testament and the New Testament. The Old Jerusalem and the New Jerusalem. But that's the progress that Mike is from. That's what Jesus came to show us. It's the science of divine law.
And that's the purging that has to take place in order to get rid of that. That's kind of a horrible definition of Jerusalem. But when you're purged of all of that, then comes the New Jerusalem, which is in Revelation. And this is an ongoing process that we individually take on, as well as collectively in a country.
I couldn't help but notice in chapter 52, awake, awake. Awake is spoken twice, and it goes on to say, put on thy strength, O Zion. And we've been given a precious treasure, this revealed truth, Christian science. But then the question is, are we going to be awake with it, or are we going to fall asleep afterwards? And that's one thing that hit me. The discussion that we had recently about occupy till I come, in other words, be active in your position, your place, whatever it is, use this science and do your part with it and occupy and be awake. But in order to be part of this remnant, not fall wayside, be distracted, you can't fall for the falling asleep, even though you've gotten it already. So fall asleep. sleep with it.
Thank you. Thank you, because that's how the rotten apple gets to you, and you become rotten too when you fall asleep. And that is why we have a lesson twice a year on Adam and fallen man, because that's the Adam dream. And it is very contagious. Very contagious. If you listen to it and dwell in it and think about it and take part in its activities, it will become the rotten apple. But if you stay awake with the truth, it can't touch you. And it, I don't care how aggressive it is. You know, and even what do they say about hypnotists and mesmerists? They say there's some people they can't mesmerize. Is that not right?
Correct.
And why is that?
They're awake.
They're awake.
They are aware. And when a thought, when a bad thought comes to them, they don't think it's their thought. They know it's not their thought. And they say, what the heck is this? And they don't listen. No, thank you,
Ruth. Sure. Yeah. Jerusalem.
This is the way.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and this is the way that the oppressor is vanquished and Zion is free, like hymn 200 talks about in this last verse.
Yes, beautiful hymn. Oh, daughter of Zion. Okay, who else is speaking?
I was going to say that Jerusalem had already been a city, and then Mount Zion, which was a little bit of a hill, chosen to be where the temple, etc., and more of a part of worship. And for some reason, I ended up with at the allegory this morning in miscellaneous writings, and it starts with, picture to yourself, quote, a city set upon a hill, unquote, a celestial city above all clouds in serene azure and unfathomable glory, having no temple therein, for God is the temple thereof, nor need of the sun, neither of the moon, for God does lighten it.
Thank you.
There we go.
Yes. The New Jerusalem.
And if there is a difference or relation between Jerusalem and Zion, Zion represents spiritual foundation. Jerusalem represents where our thought is, or our home, or where we are abiding right now.
I found something interesting about what you were saying. A Zion literally means marked or distinctive. It's the unique spiritual trait. That's from Israel International News.
And really, it's Mrs. Eddy's church demonstrated on earth, isn't it? Christian Science, New Jerusalem, Zion. Why? She relates to it so much, and why Judge Hanna wrote what he did write about prophecy of her.
I have some.
Go ahead.
Well, it could be later, actually. I just have a couple of things from the Brown Book, The 7 Days, that speak to what Mike has here, and some of it's in Mrs. Eddy's writings about this.
Okay, go for it.
Okay. So on page 64 of the Brown Book, Lessons of the Seventh Day, it is the actual letter that Mrs. Eddy's writing to Judge Hanna. And it's part of it was in the quote above, but I'll read the part that wasn't. And she says, in this vision, I prophesied great prosperity, plenty of money, blessings numberless, and the utterance was to the daughter of Zion. She shall sit under her own vine and fig tree, and all people shall hear her gladly. And then she goes on to say that there was a verse to her that was in the hall that suggested this to her thought. And this is the verse that they said was in the hall. Quote, "Daughter of Zion, awake from thy sadness. Awake, for thy foes shall oppress thee no more. Bright o'er the hills dawns the day star of gladness. Arise, for the night of thy sorrow is over." And then I wanted to go on a little bit to one part in Judge Hannah's prophecy that he printed and that they had been writing back and forth regarding whether to put it in the journal. There was one part that he felt later, Mrs. Eddy had mentioned that some of it people might not be ready for at the time, and some of it was taken out, and you know because it's in brackets, they show you in this book on page 73. And it was interesting, the part that they did remove, and I'm going to just read it as it's written. It says, quote, "This daughter of Zion is sitting under her own vine and fig tree and dispensing the wines of life and the figs of love to hungering and thirsting humanity. Has not this daughter of Zion also witnessed the fulfillment of this promise of God? No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper. Every form of opposition has been made against her and her teaching possible to humanity, saving only attempts to murder her in the ordinary or physical sense. This mental assassin has exhausted his ingenuity and resources in his vain efforts." But that was the part that was cut out. It was beautiful, but I love the wine of life and the figs of love to hungering and thirsting humanity.
Yes.
And she thwarted all the mental assassins. I like that part. She also overcame the world.
She also. But in reality, she also thwarted the physical ones, because one time a deranged person came in and picked up a chair and wanted to hit her, and then he dropped the chair, and I think he went next door or something and went to sleep in somebody's house and woke up healed. So she also didn't counter the physical very much so.
Thank you, yes. She was always aware of others' thoughts and what was trying to operate. And that's one of the great benefits of staying awake, and as you work more and more in this science, you become capable of this too. You'll know the thoughts of those around, not as a clairvoyant, but just because you're at one with the Father. He knows all. He's all-knowing. So wonderful. And yes, you know, and if we dispense this science, as was described with the wine and the feeding, we can eliminate wars. I was very struck, I'm kind of jumping down to the last question, but that quote about sit under her own vine and fig tree, maybe some of you saw there were large commentaries about George Washington and the Revolutionary War using this statement. They just longed to go home and sit under their own vine and fig trees. In fact, George Washington asked that they grow grapes and fig trees at Mount Vernon. And they were so familiar with this statement. And it goes on about, you know, that there will be no more war. So we have to remember, we have never had a war on our in the United States of America through most of our lifetime. And we have been reaping this reward of those who have gone before us, who have fought many battles, many types of battles, other than just, you know, guns and cannon. My daughter-in-law, I've told you, she's Russian. A couple of days ago, it was some Russian holiday where they were commemorating the end of World War II, and she sent me these pictures of, I don't know how many millions of Russians died in World War II. She's always felt the Russians haven't gotten the credit for the ending of that war, and that's because of probably the rise of Stalin after that. But I guess my point being, the pictures were so tragic, and we've never experienced anything like that in the United States. Other countries, yes. But are we grateful, and are we working as much as we can to dispense this wine and fruit of the figs to feed the nation so that this war, there will be no more war, as is prophesied.
And it was a fig tree that didn't have fruit that Jesus said should come down.
Yes.
It seems a good wording right now.
Yeah.
Like that, it was the fig that was in the leaf and was promising to have borne fruit, like expecting, except it was never there. And there was a result, talk and no action. Well, it was a fruitless, but it was very deceptive. There's something very evil about that fig tree. Withered away, like almost instantly the next day, I guess, gone. That was a pretty wicked fig.
Well, it wasn't doing what it was intended to do. Most fig trees are amazing. Bruce, you had a fig tree, didn't you?
I have a fig tree.
Bruce has a fig tree. It's rare in New Jersey, but...
And he sits under it.
And a fresh fig, there's nothing more delicious. And of course, the Holy Land is full of these fig trees. But it represents, and I never knew this till this week, how it represents peace. Sit under your own fig tree. Anyway, during the Revolutionary War, everyone was quoting this, and they said Washington quoted it about 50 times because they yearned to be done with this war, this fighting, this tension, this day after day. So let us do this work. But we never have to come to that. And so it will heal those nations that have been at war. Contentious. So important. And we've been given this legacy by the daughter of Zion, Penny.
Thank you. And I'm going to zip in the next question. What is... quote, O captive daughter of Zion, unquote, because that's already being covered. And I think this is wonderful. One of the things that I found about a daughter was that one who holds the faith of a certain place, and that was from Smith's Bible Dictionary. And so definitely that holiness of Zion was... what the daughter of Zion represents.
Would you read that definition again?
One who holds the faith of a certain place.
That's interesting. Yeah, well, again, occupy till you come, staying in your place, certain place. Mrs. Eddy certainly did. And Linda read, when she was reading the poem about Daughter of Zion, that is our hymn number 200 that Lauren mentioned. And it's a hymn Mrs. Eddy loved. And that chapter 54 in Isaiah is wonderful. We're going to talk more about that tomorrow at the round table. I plan to do it anyway. That's why I found it so interesting that Mike picked this as his topic. Everything does coordinate in a wonderful, interesting way.
And the funniest thing about that is that it was by, in a way, one could humanly say a mistake, because I was looking at the citations because the full text hadn't been published yet for on the website for May. So I looked at the citations, which was 52, 9, and 10. And when I opened up to 52 and I saw Daughter of Zion, I completely forgot about looking at 9 and 10, I think.
Well, I know you've been getting so much from the Bliss Nap book, and I'm so grateful because it's so important, and to share it with us like this is really wonderful.
And speaking of sharing, I am so grateful on how you... have been telling us to keep our place, because that's exactly what the daughter of Zion is keeping the proper place.
Yes, and no one can do what you can do, what your place is. When you try to do someone else's place, it doesn't work. It's got to be true. Be you as God made you to be. Fill that place. It all works together for greater good, and no place really is greater than another. They're all just different. And that I love it in, I guess, it's Timothy. Timothy, keep that which was committed to thy trust. So are you keeping that which was committed to your trust? Are you running around trying to do something else for some stupid reason?
Oh, are we still persevering even in the face of all the afflictions or persecution? It's beautiful what Mrs. Eddy went through and how she overcame it when her husband died. Isaiah 54, I think, applies so much to it when she turned to her Bible and that verse, I think it's verse 4, where it talks about, fear not, for thou shalt not be ashamed, neither be thou confounded, for thou shalt not be put to shame, for thou shalt forget the shame of thy youth, and thou shalt not remember the reproach of thy widowhood anymore. It says in the healer, Christian healer, that it comforted her so much that in October, this was in August, but then in October of that year, she could write this. The ship of science is again walking the wave, rising above the billows, bidding defiance to the floodgates of error, for God is at the helm. I thought it's just so beautiful.
That is. What page was that?
This is from 127 to 128 of Christian Healer.
Oh, Christian Healer. Well, I think Shardy is going to have to start doing the Bible study. Shardy's been, you know, doing all the roundtables quoting, but
actually, she did start. We actually have several pages up.
Oh, wonderful, because how beautiful.
And I think what came to me is Mrs. Evans's example, too. No matter what she was going through, from what you all said, the time that she was facing all this persecution is what she did even more, writing the sermons, giving the sermons and overseeing magazines and whatever else she did, even though she was going through whatever she was going through.
Yes.
So, what an example for us all.
Yes, her faith was stronger, her love was stronger. That is both from Science and Health. And she told me once her greatest growth came during persecution. And then afterwards, I always felt like she thought all of us needed some persecution. And she gave it to us just to see what we were going to do with it. I've always thought it that way. And if you take it in the right spirit, you grow. If you grumble and hate and run, you don't. So sometimes you can get accused. You don't even know what you're doing wrong. But if you learn how to deal with it through Mrs. Eddy's experience and through what you learn in the Bible, you'll come out the victor. And Mrs. Evans' mother used to say that everyone gets in life what they need. And I always thought deeply about that. So whatever comes to you, see it as something that wants to teach you a lesson you need to learn. And I don't care if it calls itself a backache, a toothache, lack of employment, a relationship problem, whatever it calls itself. It's come to teach you a lesson you need. And if you take it graciously and accept it and say, okay, Father, I will learn whatever it is you want me to learn from this, you will come out on the other side better for it. And this is part of occupying your place. You don't run from it. Maybe you're the one getting bulleted at the moment. Well, that's all right. You'll come out on the other side. better than those who are sound asleep in a belief of life and matter. Because that's, oh, look at them. They're having such a wonderful life. Well, who knows and who cares? What are you doing with what you've been given?
You know, there's more than one way to fall asleep with this science. One of the ways is to see very attractive or things like beautiful things. You're distracted by it. Another one is see very disturbing images and get very sad and discouraged over it. But either way, you've fallen asleep. Point being, stay awake, keep working, and talk to that position.
Thank you.
You know, there are two ways to be captive, aren't there? Captive, daughter of Zion. One way is to be held prisoner. The other is to be a willing captive. And I looked up the definition in Webster, and one of the definitions of captive is one whose affections are seized or held by strong ties of love. So the captive daughter of Zion, that daughter whose love is so strong for God, that there's no alternative. Paul, in some of his letters, Testament, sometimes refers to himself as a prisoner of the Lord, right? Well, whatever word was translated to prisoner, I think really means a willing captive. So I thought, am I a willing captive of God?
Thank you.
Yes, I'd rather be that.
That is very beautiful. Thank you.
That reminds me of bring every thought into the captivity of Christ.
Yes.
Excellent.
Captivity.
Yes.
That's the only captive we should be. We should be God's captive. Held there strongly, no escape. And we don't want that escape.
And we are held there by God's love for us.
Maybe since time is... No, I found the Matthew Henry commentary. This is Micah 4, but I think it's similar to the First Kings. So, Gary, you
want
to read that?
Okay.
End on that.
Okay. The nations have not yet so submitted to the Prince of Peace as to beat their swords into plowshares, nor has war ceased. But very precious promises these are, relating to the gospel church, which will be more and more fulfilled, for he is faithful that has promised. There shall be a glorious church for God set up in the world in the last days, in the days of the Messiah. Christ himself will build it upon a rock. The Gentiles worship their idol gods, but in the period spoken of, the people will cleave to the Lord with full purpose of heart and delight in doing his will. The word halteth describes those who walk not according to the divine word. The collecting the captives from Babylon was an earnest of healing, purifying, and prospering the church. And the reign of Christ shall continue till succeeded by the everlasting kingdom of heaven. Let us stir up each other to attend the ordinances of God, that we may learn his holy ways and walk in them, receiving the law from his hands, which, being written in our hearts by his Spirit, may show our interest in the Redeemer's righteousness. Matthew Henry.
Matthew Henry, yes. We could all sit under the...
our own vine.
Our own vine and our own fig tree and be grateful for that peace that comes. But peace only comes with the sword. Not by, right, everything's wonderful, even though everything's terrible. Gotta face the foe and overcome suggestions and defeat them. Then comes peace. Anyone else on that? Linda or Mike, do you have something on that one?
I just wanted to quickly say that the whole point I hope people got out of that 1 Kings 4:25 was that things were so prosperous at the beginning of Solomon's reign that everybody was at peace. Everybody had their own home. They had their own vine. They had their own fig tree. And there was no strife with other countries. There was no strife within the countries. Nobody needed a wall to hide behind. The country was free, and other nations didn't want to attack them because he treated them so well. Everybody benefited. It was a beautiful, glorious time.
Well, thank you. Why don't you read that verse from 1 Kings?
Okay, let me... well, it doesn't really come so well, but let me read that. 4:25. It is, Judah and Israel dwelt safely, every man under his vine and under his fig tree, from Dan even to Beersheba, all the days of Solomon.
Anyone else on that one? Thank you, Mike.
Well, I can read the last lines of Mrs. Eddy's letter that are very beautiful.
But
she ends with, quote, "Oh, the goodness and loving kindness of our God. Who can tell it? Oh, the long and still continued nail and spear." And, quote, "My God, hast thou forsaken me?" End quote. "Oh, the love that never faileth." And that was the end of her letter.
That's beautiful.
And there was one other thing from Matthew Henry on that 1 Kings, and he described sitting under your own vine and fig tree as spiritual peace and joy and holy security.
Beautiful, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, sitting under that vine and fig tree, we do the world work, please. Don't go to sleep under the vine and fig tree.
Well, what you had Gary read from Matthew Henry, he talked about the false gods being idol gods, but our God gives us purpose.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. And also that glorious church, Mrs. Eddy's church, that's Zion, that's what she said in miscellaneous writings, built upon the rock. Glorious church for God set up in the world, not in any one nation, but in the world for all people everywhere. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, everybody.